Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wiss.
Everybody, this is Greg. However, this is not the Brothers Wiss. This is one of my middle of the road episodes. So I'm going to start recording a few of these, perhaps. Depends on feedback. If you guys enjoy them, then I will keep recording them. If not, I will switch to something else. But it is a filler episode in between the regular Brothers Wiss. I'm not sure if I'm going to end up doing it with just myself or with some additional people. But I can tell you what, I tried recording it earlier today, and it was a nice 45-minute long diatribe of me going nonstop. And then it turns out the video was corrupted for some reason. So now I am double recording these, just like I do the Brothers Wiss podcast. So hopefully that won't happen again. It's always kind of weird when you re-record some material like this, because you get kind of this weird deja vu sensation, and you can't remember if you were telling somebody else this thing or you said it on your recording. So we'll see how this goes, and I'm assuming the stream of consciousness that I have won't quite last as long, but we'll see how it goes. So one of the things I was tasked with earlier, I'm not sure, it was maybe a week and a half ago, something like that, was backing up video files from these DVRs we have. So we have two DVRs. Obviously, the first thing we looked at doing was going in the DVR software and seeing if, right, and DVR being a hardware appliance made for recording videos. So in the DVR, we checked to see if we could export the video on some kind of regular schedule, something like that. The idea that we could be able to export it off-site and maintain it there. Unfortunately, it looks like the model of DVR 1UP from the ones we have are the ones that are capable of doing this. So we had to pivot. So I know there is an HDMI output on these guys, and we're running those to a guard check, right? So the guard's watching the video where it kind of multiplexes all the screens together. You get kind of a small video tile, right, all the way across the screen, so you can see all the cameras at once. So I'm thinking about taking a splitter. Well, I'm not even thinking about it. This is what we're going to try. I feel like this is going to be successful. We're going to take this video splitter, or rather an HDMI splitter. It's going to take the output from that. One is going to go ahead and continue to go to the monitor and the guard check, but the other one is going to go into a video encoder. So I have access to a couple of 16 bank encoder chassis, right, with these cards that slide in. There is no brand name on them. They are some kind of OEM straight from China. I have been able to successfully find them on AliExpress, but there is still no brand name on these things. But the card just says like HDMI encoder. So it's got an Ethernet port and an HDMI port, and that's it. So when we got these secondhand, the first thing I did was try and figure out what the IP address was on it. So I did what I normally do, and my router here on my desk, I actually switched Ether 5, pulled it off the bridge, and ran Torch on it, and plugged it into the HDMI encoder, and then powered it up. So Torch is a sniffer, kind of like TCP dump, right? So it just will, anything that comes in and out of the port, it will give you an indication of what it is. So there's no IP addressing I have on the port, nothing like that. I just have Torch running. After about, I don't know, 30 seconds, I saw a little bit of traffic come from 10.10.10, something like 116. So I put an IP address in that subnet, and then I was able to ping it, and then I was able to get to the web interface, so I knew I was good. I swapped to the next card in the chassis, and it was 115, and then 14, 13, 12, right? So I could easily tell what the IP address of the cards in the banks were. So that's actually a good trick. Anytime I get a piece of unknown random hardware, which you'd be surprised how often you get kind of used random things, and you got to figure out how to get into them. That's a good way of doing it. So got the cards, and I actually had a couple of the cards prior to getting the bank, but they have a big kind of connector on the back, something like a 24-pin connector, and I had no idea what the power requirements were for these things, the pinout, none of that stuff. So I grabbed my multimeter, I started testing kind of the pins together, and on the right side on the back, the first four were kind of, not kind of, but they were absolutely pinned together, and then the next four were pinned together. And then kind of just looking at the silk screening on the board, it sort of looked like those two were the power and ground. Wasn't 100% on that, but it appeared to be as such. So I hooked my desktop power supply on there. It's a Dr. Meter that I got off. It's a HY3003D DC power supply. It's really cool. You can basically get it from 0 volts all the way up to something like 32 or 36 volts just by turning it. And there's a fine grain control as well. It's actually got a pretty good current output on that guy too. So you can, you know, power up some high current devices. You know, they're pulling a lot of amps. Anyway, prior to that, I used to had all these fiddly ways to try and get various voltages, but man, it makes life so easy having a benchtop power. And I think it was like $35 or something. It's definitely a no-brainer. You guys should have one on your bench as well. But I started by trying to figure out which one was positive, which one was negative. I figured I had it, so I clipped on my power supply and I started with the lowest voltage I thought it could be, maybe 3.3 volts, right? Like some microcontrollers and stuff run at 3.3. So I did that, powered it up, nothing. So I then tweaked it up to 5 volts, powered it up, and sure enough, I got a link light. So I had guessed the polarity and the voltage correctly. I didn't release the magic smoke that actually makes everything run electronics-wise. So got those guys up. And so I didn't want to put a big giant chassis in, because I really just needed two, because there's two physical DVRs. And then you got a third card for redundancy. And so I used one of these ABS enclosures online. It's like a 7.5 inch by 7.5 inch by like a 4 inch, maybe 3.5 inch, somewhere in there. I've used one of these before on another project and it worked really well. It's actually got these plastic screws built into the lid and it's got a little seal in there. Not that I need it to be waterproof, but having the screws built into the lid is really nice because you never lose them. So I went with a 3/8 inch drill bit and I drilled a whole pattern all the way around just to give it some passive cooling. I know the big chassis had a little bit of fans, but I think that was for the power supplies. It didn't look like there were any fans really adjacent to the cards themselves, so I think this passive cooling is going to be all right. Again, it's just two cards. They're going to be in there. So while it's encoding, I know they heat up a bit, but there should be enough airflow, so kind of that convection system or whatever will keep them cool. Now, I said it was 5 volts, and it's not common to see a high current 5-volt power supply because each one of these pulled about at 5 volts. I think they're somewhere around 400 milliamps, somewhere in that neighborhood. So across the three, it's 1.2 amps. Yeah, that's right. I can do math. So across the three, if they were all going, even though they're not all going to really be pulling a lot of power because they're not going to be encoding. So even at 1.5 amps, that's still a pretty decent draw for 5 volts, and you don't really typically see any of those. So I have some buck converters, and whenever I buy components, I usually buy them in a lot, right? I get like 5 or 10 or something like that, just so I'll have extras for projects. In a pinch, I'll go on Amazon because I can get them on Prime. I'm going to pay a little bit more. But then once I want to restock, you know, I'm actually thinking about it, which isn't very often, I'll go to AliExpress and pick up a whole bunch of them for 25 or 50% of the cost, even though it takes longer to get over here. I love AliExpress, especially for electronics components. There's such a good variety. It's a really tremendous resource. If you guys haven't actually tried it, you should give it a look. And the buck converter, the really good thing about that is, one is it does smoothing, right? So it has capacitors and stuff like that. But also, no matter what your input voltage is, it's going to regulate it down to the 5 volts. So I can put it on my bench power supply. There's a potentiometer with a little screw on top, and you'll tweak it down so that it's spitting out 5 volts, right? So what I do is I clip on my power supply, and then I use alligator clips and clip on my multimeter, so I can just tweak it without having to, you know, like try and have a whole bunch of extra arms. But then once you get it dialed into the right output voltage, I can take the knob on my power supply and I can tweak it up, I can tweak it down, and it always spits out a consistent 5 volts, right? So no matter what these knuckleheads use to power this thing, so even if my power supply gets lost that I include with it or it dies, they can swap it out with virtually anything else and it's going to continue to function, right? I also use a barrel jack. So they make a bunch of those that have like screw terminals in the back or direct solder. I happen to have some of the screw terminal ones, so I just use that. I super glued it in and then put a zip tie on the outside to hold it nice and tight so that belt and suspenders, right? And then cut out a slot, inserted the cards, screwed those in. Prior to doing that, I actually soldered on some leads directly to the not the outside of the connector, but on the inside where the lines go down and into the board. I soldered on leads for the power and ground wires. So then I soldered those guys over to the buck converter, put everything together, screwed the lid on tight, put a old Microtech 24 volt power supply in there, and Bob's your uncle, it's powering up just fine. So that should be able to take it. And these cards are very simple. Username, password, admin, admin, you get in there, and there's actually a decent amount of knobs in there, and I have it configured so that it'll spit out an RTSP stream, right? I tested it by going to VLC, running a Roku off of it so I can actually see the feed, and audio and video comes through nicely. That RTSP stream, what I'm going to use is something like, I think at my remote site, I'm going to install Blue Iris on a server, which is, it is not open source, but it is a kind of vendor agnostic NVR for recording video, right? You can pull in a lot of IP cameras and things like that, but really I'm just gonna tell it I've got two IP cameras, which are actually gonna be the RTSP stream coming off these, so I'll technically have all of my cameras there, so it will be a good video feed coming into this thing. And then if for whatever reason I feel like I need to add a couple of other cameras to this, like direct cameras, then I can just subscribe to the RTSP stream from those and record them as well. So I think it's a good solution. Already had most of the components. All I had to do was buy the box, which was like $17. I guess the boost converter, those are probably a couple of dollars, barrel jack, and then, I mean, really, most of it I had already kind of had on the shelf, and even then it was fairly inexpensive components. Excuse me. So it's a fairly cheap way of doing it. I think it's going to work just fine. I'd be curious if you guys have some alternate ways that you would attempt to do this. Let me know one way or the other. But it was kind of a fun project to put together. I like making things, so this was sort of a, you know, build it, solder it, test it, and good. This one, instead of doing it all myself, I'm going to hand it off to my guys. I'm going to let them come up with a solution to get into the network and then over to something else. Let those guys grow, right? Let's see what else. So I've been working on my newest CCNA courses. It's going to be a three-part series. I've already turned in the first part. Actually, the first one went live. It was my 14th CCNA course. It went live just a few days ago. And it's beating out the new CCNA exam, right? It doesn't even come out until February, I think. And yet my courses are already going live, which is fun because this first one, I started building it before any of the study materials came out, which if you don't have the study materials, it's kind of difficult to tell precisely what they want to see on the exam. So I had to build a bunch of it and then wait for the very first set of study materials to come out. And then I hurried up and I had to, between the time I had to record and the study materials came out, were about 2 weeks. So I had to try and fix my course as fast as I could and then record it, which was really interesting. I mean, I totally understand why LinkedIn Learning wants it that way, right? They want to be ahead of the curve. They want to be some of the first ones out with this content. But it makes it really difficult on me, which I guess is not their problem. You know, I mean, I relayed my thoughts and worries to them, and they were okay with it. And they said, yes, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's go. So we did it, and we went, and that course is live. But subsequently, some of the stuff pops in my head every now and then from there. You know, I mean, a lot of this information, whenever I study stuff, it's in there. It's locked in for, you know, a good little while, and then just happens to fall out. You know, if you don't use it, you lose it sort of thing. And this is one of those. And something I use quite frequently is policing, right, with cues and output cues on my routers, input and output, I should say. So policing, I just do tail drop. So as packets come into the device, if it exceeds whatever the configured rate limit is, it just starts dropping any additional packets. Policing in Cisco technically allows you to pick certain types of traffic that you can start dropping first, right, over your preferred stuff. But in my case, since I'm just kind of in the ISP environment, I just drop it. It's all the same. Every packet is the same to me. And there's also the option for shaping, right? So shaping is actually going to queue packets for a little while and then send them, right? But queuing also means there's going to be some delay associated with, right? If you're holding something for a while and then allowing it to go, you're going to introduce delay. And so there are some like low latency queues that you can set up for your voice traffic, video traffic, things like that, that are important that you want to go through quickly. So it's also kind of a set of cues that also have prioritization. So you can pick which ones should be serviced first. So it's little tidbits like that that fall out of my head and then get reintroduced. And I guess as I do these things over and over, eventually more and more of it sticks. I have no idea. It feels like every time I do this, like all of it's new to me. Somehow I've forgotten everything. Not everything. I remember the Cliff's Notes version. It's all the details in between that seem to fall out. Oh man, what else happened? I think it was last week, late last week. This has been a busy couple of weeks. This is going to be a busy month for me. We went to the company Christmas party, and there was this interesting juxtaposition I saw. It's kind of old people versus young people. That's how I put it in my notes. And I guess that's really what it boils down to. So, in essence, it's the executive team versus the kind of network operations and operations guys in general that they seem to segregate, right? There's a clear divide between the two. And I seem to be the only person that sort of straddles it. It's weird. Well, I mean, there were no knock guys when I first started there. You know, I was one of the knock guys, right? It was a smallish team, and now that it's really grown, those guys, I mean, there's a lot of them as opposed to executives, and I am an executive now, and I just don't necessarily feel like it anymore because I feel like there's this divide between them and everybody else. I mean, they seem to be older and slightly out of touch with technology just because they aren't the tech guys, right? Even though I am, I guess, technically one of the tech guys and in technology. Yeah, so it's sort of weird. And also growing up with those guys, you know, you become responsible for them. You know, you start becoming their manager. There is this clear delineation that starts forming, right? And I was talking to one of the other guys about his people, and I was saying, you know, it's like you don't tell your boss everything that pops in your head, right? And he goes, no. And I said, well, you don't expect your employees to do the same, do you, either? And he goes, oh, I guess not, right? And that's the idea, is that now that I am separate from these folks, you know, there start to be less they're going to tell me. And also, you know, I'm sure they're going to sit around and complain about me around the water cooler, as people do, you know, about management. There's just nature of the beast. So just thinking how that's kind of funny. But I do kind of bridge the gap so I can go and I can talk to those guys and, you know, interact because we've worked together so long. And then I can go and I can talk with the executive teams and be that guy, kind of code switch back and forth between the two. But you don't really see it the other way around. You don't really see any of the tech guys go and talk to the execs. You don't really see any of the execs go and talk to the youngs. Well, I mean, you do see a few of the higher ups attempt to ingratiate themselves with the younger folks, but it doesn't exactly work, right? It's a whole lot of small talk, and I despise small talk, to be honest with you. I like big talk. I like switching into big talk pretty quick. And people that don't really have much beyond the surface level, I kind of get bored quick. And I think the largest sin in life, the only thing to me that's unforgivable, is for people to be boring. I like them to be interesting. Oh, man. So what else happened last weekend? Well, I've had several pickleball tournaments. I'm sure you guys are terribly fascinated by pickleball. And yes, it is an old people sport, but damn it, I am an old people. So it works just fine. But in this last one, so in the previous one, I actually got, what did we get? We got bronze in mixed doubles, right? So I only ever played doubles, and it was mixed doubles. So it was me and a female partner, and we got bronze in that. And I had just run out of energy. I had just crashed because I hadn't been eating, right? I mean, it's like you're going all day. So I remedied it in this last tournament last weekend, or was it not because this is the weekend. So it was the previous weekend. I remedied it by, I found this like energy gel that had some caffeine in there, and I never do caffeine, so a little goes a long way for me. So I was eating a little bit of that while I was making sure to eat enough food, and so energy wasn't the issue. But towards the end, I started cramping. It started in my toes. They were like curling up on me. It was getting crazy, and then it kind of made its way up to my calves. And I went up for a smash one time, and then I left calf locked in the middle of the air. When I landed, it was hard as a rock. It was pretty amusing. We called timeout. You don't get much time, but somebody found some pickle juice for me and this stuff called pickle potion, which comes in a, looks like a flask, and it's like pickle juice, and it's all disgusting. I don't want to drink pickle juice. That's awful. But I somehow, between that and like massaging my calf and like constantly moving them, I kind of muddled my way through there. We ended up getting fourth by a hair's width, almost made it in the bronze medal match. And this tournament was significantly larger. So this was, even this fourth place, as opposed to the third in the other one, was a much bigger, much bigger accomplishment. But it was a very near thing. But leg cramps, yeah. So I'm gonna have to pregame. I have to pregame to prevent those leg cramps in that one. So what's another thing that's happened recently? See, so this stuff is random and strange. We got a possum in our yard. All right, and my child, my 14-year-old, who loves arguing semantics, made sure to tell me that an opossum is what we have here in the United States, and possum with no O is what they have in Australia. And those guys are cute, and ours are not cute. But also, through research, learned that it's fairly common in American vernacular to just say possum without the opossum. So possum it is. Anyway, we get possums every so often in our yard. And this one, I had to admire his commitment to the bit. He was playing dead. I haven't seen one really play dead in a long time. Usually they're hissing, excuse me, at our dogs and such. And this guy, we have this big, long fishing net. So what I do is I scoop him up, and he is committing to the bit. And I'm looking at him, and his eyes are open. He's blinking, but he's not moving. And, you know, I'm commending him the whole time. I'm like, good on you, bud. Don't break character. You know, he's like a mascot at Disney World. You know, you can't take the mask off even if you're about to pass out. So I carry him all the way to the woods in this thing, and I dump him, and he blops on the ground, and he maintains his composure and stillness. And subsequently, he was gone the next day. So I knew it was just playing possum. But I was thinking how fun it was to commit to the bit. So back to something technical. And we had one of our carriers, we had Talia go down for about 45 minutes the other day, which isn't significantly long. And their peer, so BGP, whenever you create a connection to another device, it's called your peer. And in that peering, you can actually hand information. And so their router sent me a message that basically says, we're shutting the session down. So they shut the session down, and it was down for 45 minutes. And of course, instantly you put in a ticket and you wait 5 minutes. If they don't respond, you have one of your guys call. If you have to get stuck in that call rotation, that sucks. But anyway, they subsequently replied back and said that everybody on that peering router up in Dallas had lost their session. They were investigating. At the end of the 45 minutes, we saw it come up. Well, subsequent to that, I put in some probation was put in. In essence, what we do is we prepend a whole bunch to that carrier, any of the addressing we're sending out, and then we drop all routes except for the default route coming in, right? So technically, they are still usable. They're going to look so far away that no traffic's going to come in there, and I'm not going to send anything out because I've got better path through all these other upstreams giving me full routes. But if all else fails, it's still there, and it will still be used. So after I had that put in place, on my ASR 9000s, my border routers, I did a show BGP, the IP address of the neighbor, and then advertised routes, which is pretty common, right? Just what am I sending out there? Just making sure that my probation stuff was working as expected, which I'm somewhat paranoid, so I check that stuff even though I know it's working. And it actually showed me all of the prepended paths on the routes that we're sending, which was a surprise to me because I was accustomed to doing that with Catalyst series like 6500s and 7600s. And whenever you're doing prepending and you're doing it outbound and you look at the peers, what you're advertising to them, you don't see any of that. For whatever reason, it's not a bug. It's just the way the Cat iOS stuff works. It doesn't actually expose any of that to you. So the iOS XR does show that to you. And I have been so impressed by the iOS XR code time after time, this being one of them, right? So now I can actually see what's happening to the advertisements going out. I can see the manipulation. That's tremendous. The commit command, I love that. You know, type commit and it'll actually apply instead of instantly applying configurations as opposed to regular iOS. As soon as you put something in iOS, it's active. Whereas this, you can put in several commands, then say commit and it commits them. Or you can commit with kind of a rollback feature of I commit it, but if there's no interaction from the console after X number of seconds, then roll it back. Used to, you had to do reload in. So if you made a change and you locked yourself out, then the whole chassis would reboot. I mean, subsequently, it goes back to the configuration. But if you're doing like a 6500 or 7600, A reboot could take, I don't know, 8 minutes. It takes forever, a lifetime, whereas this commit can actually happen fairly fast. So love that stuff. Anyway, at the end of this whole thing, the 45-minute, in their in their email notification to us, they said there was a permanent fix and that there shouldn't be any further issues. Permanent fix. And I was thinking about it. That's crazy, because they didn't have enough time to go up there and swap out a card, right? If some piece of hardware failed and they replaced it, like in the chassis, like some failed redundant thing, then there would have to be some swap, right? So it's not like permanent fix. It was just so odd. And I thought about it some more, and then I was like, oh yeah, these guys did maintenance 2 nights ago. So I'm assuming what had happened was they left some piece of configuration out. The tech got in there through some out-of-band management or something of the like, added the config really quick, oh crap, wrote it to memory, and then that was the permanent fix, right? So through talking through my guys with this, I was like, you know, it happens even to the big boys. It's pretty crazy, right? You know, I mean, nobody's perfect. Everybody has mistakes. We're all human, and it seems like the vast majority of failures in our industry come from human error as opposed to equipment malfunction. So I'm not sure what it was, but there you have it. So I was also recently, it popped in my head that there's a lot of Christmas shows that come on, right? Television, specialized, things like that around the holidays. And one of them is, I'm a Doctor Who fan. I'm not sure how many of you guys are Whovians. It seems like there's more people that are Doctor Who fans than aren't. So people just don't dig it, I'm sure. I'm one that does enjoy it. I've watched all the episodes. Obviously not back to the 60s or whatever, but since they've done the reboot, I've watched it all. Even got my kids to watch a chunk of it. They're kind of over it now, it seems. Once they got to the last couple of Doctors, they kind of faded away. But anyway, generally they do a Christmas Day special. And I looked and saw they are not doing one this year. However, they are doing a New Year's Day special. So that's something to look forward to, as well as they keep doing this chunk of these chunks of shows, right, where they're like skipping a year, but this is supposed to herald in the new season. So looking forward to that. Got a new season coming at us. And also, I've got another show that I really like, which is the Great British Bake Off, which I don't know, maybe it's odd that a man my age is so enamored by the Great British Bake Off, but I am, and I'm unabashed. I love it. And they have a Christmas Day special where they bring back past bakers from other episodes, you know, rather random seasons, and smack them all together in the tent and have a little episode. And I love it. And it's charming, like always. And then they are also having a New Year's Day one, similar format, only they are pulling the cast from Dairy Girls, which is it's a show about these kids. They're kind of like high school age kids, and it's set in like the 80s in Ireland somewhere. You kind of go through some of the weird turmoil that they're having at that time. And I think the first season for me was probably the best. I really enjoyed it. I tried to get Tom Smith to watch it. I think he subsequently watched a couple of episodes at least, and I think he thought it was funny. It is a very funny show. But anyway, they've got like six of the kids, or maybe five of the kids and one of the adults from that show, and they're going to be on there baking some stuff. So you should check it out. I wonder, there's got to be some other really good specialized stuff. You guys let me know what you're really into. All right. You can't talk about Christmas or holidays and media without talking about your favorite Christmas movie. So obviously I've already watched Die Hard. That's my number one favorite Christmas movie. Come at me. Lethal Weapon, I haven't watched that yet. That is obviously a Christmas movie. The movie begins with Jingle Bell Rock. There is a shootout / fight scene in a Christmas tree lot, right? So it's definitely set at the holidays. I think even the final scene happens like on Christmas Eve or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember. It's very close to that. It's a Christmas movie, right? We've also already watched Home Alone, and we enjoy watching that every year with the kids. My kids are 14 and 11, so they're not as much kids as they used to be, but they still enjoy the show. And I forget how many slow parts are in there. It does really creep in a couple of spots. I started watching Scrooged with them, which is a Bill Murray comedy kind of based on, what is it? The Dickens one. You know, where there's several ghosts that come and visit, past, present, future. It's like a comedy based on that. Anyway, we didn't get very far. We had to pause it. So we need to pick back up on that and get going again. I'm just curious, and so also, I guess my favorite all time Christmas movie is A Christmas Story, right? Ralphie and his brother Randy and all of their shenanigans surrounding Christmas. But you know, it's so funny that growing up, it was just myself, my sister, and my mom. And I would look to media, movies, and TV to see, you know, what the ideal unified family was supposed to look like, right? That was kind of my, I guess my high water mark for what a family would look like, as dysfunctional as their family seemed to be, is what it was. And at the closing scene of A Christmas Story, you know, Alfie, spoiler alert, he gets his BB gun and, you know, Ralphie's going to sleep with like a Zeppelin in his arm or whatever. And then they show the parents drinking wine down there and then they pull back, right? They're showing the outside of the house and they're pulling back and it's snowing and they've got these multicolored C9 lights on their house. And so that scene right there always stuck with me. So when I got my very first house, that's exactly what we put up. We put up the multicolored C9 lights. And subsequently, every year since then, I've always put up the multicolored C9 lights. And I don't know, it makes me feel good because it's me living that kind of image of what the perfect Christmas house and family, you know, what kind of looks like from the outside. Even though it's chaos on the inside, it's it's got that look on the outside. I don't use real bulbs anymore. I do the LED stuff. I like that better. It seems to last so much longer. We don't break a bunch of bulbs every year that way. But it's still the C9. Still the size and the color. And it still gives me that feeling. So that's my Christmas movie stuff. Let's see, what else did we do this weekend? We went, and this was in honor of you guys that had come down to the Austin Mum. My crew and I. So that's my wife and my oldest. We went to Gus's Chicken in Austin. I poured a little bit of Gus's out for my homies that weren't there to join me. And then we went to Master Pancake Theater. We went and saw their Christmas special, which is hilarious. It's this weird mashup of all these different Christmas episodes. But Master Pancake, for those that didn't get to come to Austin, it's like Mystery Science Theater 3000, but it's live and it's very foul humored. There's no family-friendly jokes associated with this one. And it's at the Alamo Draft House on 6th Street, which is like a big, long street full of bars. But it's got this movie theater, and you can eat and drink, and they have good food, great refreshments. It's a lot of fun. So we had a lot of fun in your honor, guys. Hopefully we can get you all down to do it again. Hopefully the next mom, we can find some really fun shenanigans as well. Looking forward to it. Let me think. Do I know anything else? I actually kept this one down like 10 extra minutes. I'm not sure what I cut out on this one, but I cut out something. So I'm just curious, does this work for you guys? You find this interesting in any way? Just kind of a weird regurgitation of some of the stuff that happened to me during the week, some of my thoughts. I'm not sure. Let me know if you want to hear something different, if you want something completely different, if you think this is okay, you enjoy this format. Do you think I should do this with some people? Should I get, you know, like one other person on here? I don't want to turn it into another Brothers Wisp because it's so hard to organize that many people. I really want it to be more of kind of conversation, which I don't know if anybody's interested in that or not. But I know maybe I can drag Nick Arellano in here. We used to talk once a week. You know, I mean, we'd catch up, but Joker's been so busy. He's in high demand, obviously, because he's so talented. Maybe I could grab him on for the next one or something like that and be our excuse to catch back up. I don't know. We'll see. You guys, let me know what you think. Again, question, comments, greg@gregsoul.com. You can go over to Brothers Wisp. You can support us at patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. Every little bit helps. You know, it helps us get to the shows, helps us buy equipment, helps us do this stuff. Thank you guys for listening. Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes, we're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.